All right. So, as we return, you find yourselves in the Forge of the Seventh, where you came to recover Sadra. And after finding her, suspended, in a sort of stasis, you proved your loyalty and faith in her. And with a very important vote of confidence from Nadia, Roshan, the Seventh Forge Lord, released her, realizing through mounting evidence that the hard reality was proving true, that somehow Sadra really was his granddaughter, and he really did give her the armor, which meant that somebody had changed reality. Somehow he'd forgotten or never known about any of it. He left you all with word that you could find accommodations in the back of the forge, and went back to work in the forge. You find yourselves now in those accommodations, just a little ways from the forge, but as you enter them, the air becomes perfectly comfortable. You find there are cushions, there are beds, there are sofas, there are tables spread with food and drink. Everything that you could need stands before you. And you're left in a sort of unexpected calm. Sadra, taking in all of this, is rather quiet, subdued. What are the rest of you doing or thinking?
Maneha will approach Sadra and ask her, are you all right, Lady Sadra? Are you hurt at all?
No, I'm not hurt. I'm not hurt. But I can't help but feel very sad.
I am thinking that you are not physically hurt. But there is more than just one kind of hurt, Lady Sadra. I will leave you to your thoughts. But if you need any of us, please, we are always available to you.
Thank you. Thank you, Maneha.
And unless he is hanging out with Sadra, Maneha will go and find Katsu and talk with him for a moment.
All right. And as that player is not with us tonight,
So I will not
have to deal with that off screen. Yes, great sadness.
Keen would have gone up with Maneha to talk to Sadra, and after Maneha departs, Keen looks at Sadra and he looks like he's about to speak, like he wants to offer some words of comfort. But he closes his mouth and he just gives her a big hug. And after a moment he lets go and walks quickly away.
And Sadra is stunned a little bit by the gesture. But she smiles back at his retreating form as Keen leaves. And she's glad for her friends.
Keen will go and explore the forge.
Okay. So, in this room, it is a pretty good-sized room, and it looks like it has everything that you would need to be comfortable. Do you leave this room, then?
Keen wants to find somewhere, actually, where he can be alone and do some thinking, because all of this talk about family and fathers and grandfathers is beginning to get to him. So he's and you know, he's keen, so he wants to look around a bit more. He's going to leave the room.
Okay. As Keen makes his way out of the room, Bruman and Aesel, what are you up to?
Are there apples handy, perchance?
There are.
Alrighty. He will find an apple and get it, and then take it to Aesel and give it to her. And ask her, "You alright?"
"I'm okay." She'll take the apple from him. "Thank you."
"Anytime. Are you sure you're okay?"
"I will be as soon as we get out of here, I think."
He looks around. It's not quite as fiery in here, right?
No, it is very comfortable in this room. In fact, there is no sign of any fire at all. There's not a burning fire pit or fireplace. The room is lit by a unknown light source. It just seems to be at a comfortable brightness. There are some areas that are a little bit darker. Seem like they would be very nice to go and take a nap in. But it is not uncomfortable in the least. It's maybe even a little bit cool.
At least we're not on the surface anymore. Have you ever been here before?
Not here. Not the plane of fire. But, yeah, I'm glad we're not... She'll gesture vaguely. Glad we're not out there.
He'll nod a little awkwardly, glance around again. "Oh, by the way, you did really well with your, scouting. And, you know, taking out an entire courtyard. That was impressive."
"Thanks, I guess. I mean, what else was I supposed to do? Just natural, I guess."
He gets a curious look. Being a druid, I suppose that would be natural.
"Just a little bit.
But from one that's not a druid, not sure if that's natural or, as Carrick would say, unnatural."
"I guess you're right."
"Don't misunderstand me. I am glad we did not have to deal with any more people."
"Yeah, no kidding. Honestly, I think we cut it a little close there."
"Uh-huh." He just kind of nods.
"You especially."
Yeah, that could have been interesting. "You, there's not any lingering magic on me, is there?"
I can take a look. And she will use Detect Magic on him to see if there's any not normal magic on him that he doesn't normally have.
As you use Detect Magic, you do not detect anything out of the ordinary. There's no compulsions or enchantments.
Great. Well, you seem fine. There's nothing out of the ordinary there. Just your weapons and whatnot.
He smirks at that comment. I'm glad to hear that. What about that mask in your bag?
Oh, do you want me to check if there's magic on that?
Well, personally, I'd rather it not be, you know, with us ever, but given the circumstances, that's, you know.
Yeah, I need to give it to you, but it seems he's a little busy at the moment.
Are you sure that's safe?
Giving it to Neil?
Yeah.
What do you mean, Brew?
Well, he considers for a bit. What will Mew do with it? Can he destroy it?
Well, I was wondering if he'd want to study it. You probably can destroy it. Frankly, I could probably destroy it too, but... And she'll shrug.
Wasn't it used to more or less force someone against his will?
I mean, yeah, but this one hasn't been used yet. I was wondering if there's anything different because it hasn't been used, you know?
I see. He looks a little uncomfortable at the whole idea.
I'd rather not walk in on our enemies unprepared. So him figuring it out, more or less, would probably help.
To understand their opponents?
Mm-hmm.
Well, there's certainly wisdom in that.
I wonder what we have to do now, since we've got Sadra back.
Yeah, the whole time thing, you'd think I'd understand it by now, but it seriously hurts my brain sometimes.
I don't think any of us fully understand it.
I don't know. Are there multiple copies of every one of us in multiple different, I don't know, timelines? And they can break? Oh, obviously they can break. We've already dealt with that once, but...
Maybe? There could be. But I don't know.
GM, how far away is Adra?
Sadra is... She would have After talking with Maneha and Keen, kind of stayed a little bit to herself. She is probably, I'd say, 30 feet away. She's kind of on the other side of the room from you guys.
Okay, but still probably within earshot.
Yeah, but we'll go ahead and do a sense motive check. You look at her and she looks very much turned inward to herself. Seems to be contemplating some pretty big things on her own right now. So you don't think she's probably listening to what you guys are talking about.
Okay. He'll lower his voice anyways as he considers Sadra. What will it even mean to fix this? I mean, we haven't seen anything about Cyrus here, but we did find Nadia. But if we quote-unquote fix this, what'll that do to Nadia? And Cyrus, for that matter. And Sadra.
I don't know. It could be that we return to the time where she was taken from here, which means her family would be dead, or it could return everything to before then. I don't know, Bru. I don't know.
He shakes his head. Me neither. He'll find an apple for himself and sit down and contemplate life for a bit.
All right. And, Nadia? What is Nadia up to?
Nadia is eating snacks. She's wishing for some baklava.
All right, and even as you think about that baklava that your mother used to make, it's a family recipe, of course, and nobody could make it like your mother. When you look back over the table, and you see baklava sitting there, and it looks just like your mother made it.
I'm gonna eat some.
All right, and you taste it, and it is very nearly identical to what your mother would make. Although, if you scrutinize it very closely, it's not quite right.
It's not quite right about it.
Maybe it's a little too sweet or not sweet enough. There's just, the proportions aren't quite on point.
She'll actually bring some over to Sadra.
Sadra doesn't notice Nadia approaching right away, but will look up as she realizes that Nadia is very close. How are you doing?
Okay. I guess. It's really strange being here.
I know. I never thought that I would be here.
You haven't been here before?
Oh no. I mean, you, I would hear stories about my grandfather, but I never met him. I mean, until we're here, and that's all still a little bit hard to remember. But it's incredible. Have you been here before?
No. Frankly, I wasn't sure if we'd survive this trip. But I'm glad you did.
And Sadra smiles briefly at that. And as well, I'm glad that we're all here, at least.
I kinda owe you one.
What do you mean?
Saving our taxes.
You don't owe me anything. Our taxis. I couldn't begin to count how much I owe him. I was glad to do it. It was difficult, though. That garrison was very strong.
Well, it's not exactly the kind of thing that any sane person would attempt.
Well, that's true, but I don't think that's a title that our group has been given. So maybe that's a bad thing.
Anya kind of smirks. Anyway, I brought you this. Thought you might like some of the taste of Cordova.
And she will take the piece. Thank you very much. This was... Well, I suppose this is one of your favorites?
Yes.
And she will take a small bite.
Now that our taxis is safe, what do you want to do?
As soon as I am able to talk to them, I need to talk to the taxis and the other two prisoners and see if anybody knows about the leak. And I do need to go back sooner than later to warn the resistance that there may be retaliation from what we just did. Long-term plans? I'm not sure I have them at this point.
Thank you.
Well, I suppose that makes two of us then. I'm just trying to think what the next step is. I suppose Grandfather talked about that crystal, that tear of time, about taking it into the Grand Sultan's palace. But I don't know what will happen when we do that.
Sure, I understand all that or its implications.
I don't understand it all myself. When I was exiled from this world, I didn't really know anything that had happened, but there was a point when the armor sort of spoke to me, and there was a message. The first time that I saw Grandfather, but I knew it was him, and I was told that I'd been removed from the world to protect me, that something horrible had happened. He called it an errant wish, but I don't understand that entirely. Something happened, and I suppose I need to try to fix that.
I'm afraid I don't really know what that means.
Twitch, Sadra just gives a sheepish sort of a smile and says, well, hopefully we figure it out.
Is there anything else that you would like to eat?
Well, every summer, towards the end of summer, when we would go to Amaya for the end of summer feast, and Father would go out and they would hunt the gazelle, that always tasted the best. When they would bring back the gazelle and then they would roast it, I don't know what all they put on it, but it tasted so good. It's probably one of the best things I ever ate. It was always my favorite trip when we would go.
Let's go check over the table again. I want to see something.
And so Sandra will stand up with you, and as you approach the table, you can see now, central on one of the tables, there is a spitted gazelle that has been roasted. That wasn't there before.
Neither was this. I still have a piece of the baklava on my hand.
Do you think it's grandfather. And Sadra will very quickly cut a piece of the roasted gazelle, and she will taste it, and her eyes get wide for a moment before she closes them and just drinks in the flavor. This is exactly what it tasted like. You should try it. So good.
Alrighty, I'll eat some.
Alright, and as you eat some, you've never had this before. Amaya is a long way to the east from Cordova, and while gazelle is not necessarily off the menu in that area, it's not something that you would necessarily find outside of that region. But even as you taste it and you enjoy the rich herbs and the deep kind of earthy seasoning on the meat and worked into it, there's a part of you that almost senses that it seems familiar, like something from a dream. Something that, even though you've never had it before, part of you seems to remember it.
Strange.
Do you like it?
Yes, I really do.
You know, our taxis would always come with us on the hunt. Of course, the Royal Guard were always there, but he might like some as well. Maybe it's something that you could share with him?
I do wish he was here.
Sadra kind of smiles, almost sad that she had said anything, a little apologetically, seeing that it has made Nadia wish that he could be there. Let me ask you, did Nadia specifically say, "I wish he was here"?
Yes.
All right. Then, as you say that, and Sadra kind of reaches over and grabs, you know, just holds Nadia's arm a little bit apologetically, you hear a startled, "Ah, where am I? Wait. Wait, I know all of you. What? Why am I here? Is this Sombra?"
Nadia put her hand on her face. I didn't think that would actually work.
To which then Sadra, she will laugh a little bit, also surprised and unsure what to say, before giving Nadia a bit of a side hug. And, there's a momentary pause where she thinks about Cyrus. But apparently Cyrus is not here and nobody knows about him. And then she looks back to Nadia and she'll say, "Well, you wished for it. Maybe you should take him some." And she will step back away. But as she steps back and away from Nadia, there is a sort of a sad look that crosses her face. As she's happy for Nadia, but she's also sad.
"Are you okay?"
I'm fine. I'm just... Well... I'm fine. But I don't think Artaxes is. He might need somebody to help him get his bearings.
She goes over to Artaxes. Are you okay?
Where are we? Are we still in the world?
This is my father's house.
Oh, Ataf, save us. Wait, this is your father's house. Alright, that's a good thing. Where is he?
He is in his forge. We were able to get Sabra back.
Wonderful. That's wonderful.
And here she is. I gesture over to her to help Hina have the same.
Which Sadra will step forward smiling, and she'll bow her head
and say, Artaxes, it's good to finally meet you. And I'm glad to see that you're doing well. Artaxes looks back to Nadia before smiling and says, Yes, well, thank you for everything that you and your friends have done to help Nadia and to help me. I can't tell you how grateful I am to be free. If there's anything that I can do for you, please let me know. I would be glad to help. Well, and Sadra takes a look to Nadia and Artaxes and says, I think I'm going to go check in with the others. And she will separate herself, leaving Nadia and Artaxes. As she is actually going to head over towards where Bruman and Aesol are at.
Aesol will greet Sadra and just welcome her to join them.
And Sadra will look at both of you and say, Well, how is it going over here? Do you have everything that you need? Because apparently, if you want something, you just have to ask for it.
Brew blinks. Well, that's handy.
Yeah. No kidding. Anything?
Well, Nadia did just wish Artaxes across the plains. So, I would say that the bar is set pretty high.
Yeah, I'd say so.
Brew will glance over at Aesol, and then back to Sadra. Like, that's interesting.
So, how are you doing, Sadra?
Well, I don't know.
I guess I'm happy for Nadia and Artaxis that they're together. Well, just... it's different. It's not... it's not what I remembered.
Azel will give her a sympathetic look. I'm sorry, Sadra. It must be odd.
I don't really know what's going to happen. If we can use that crystal and set things to right, if that's possible, I don't know what that's going to mean.
Yeah. It could be anything. Hopefully for the best, though.
What are you hoping for, Sadra? What would be your ideal outcome?
Well, I would hope that Cordoba would be back the way I remember it, that my home would be here. But what does that mean for this world? And what does that mean for the ones that are living here?
Maybe they could keep living. Maybe they never exist. There's a whole range of things that could happen.
I don't know. I don't know what would happen. I just wish that my father was here. Somebody would know him. And she did say those words, but nothing happened.
Manea will approach everyone with a plate in his hands. Oh, did you know that I do not know how to properly address this person, but that, Nadia's father has the aqua blue plant here? Because look, and he shows you a plant with these, or a plate with these blueberries. These are berries that I thought only grew outside of the village of my people up in by the river. And I was saying to myself, I wish that I had some of these berries. And I looked around at the table and there were some. That is very peculiar. Perhaps they grow differently here in this plain of fire. And he will almost insist that you all try some. And they're pretty good, a little bit tart.
I'm glad that you were so fortunate that they were here. To be honest, I kind of wish that Mew was around. I think he'd get I think he'd enjoy that table. He might actually put it through its uses.
Oh, I think that he is studying something in the forge right now. He is kind of studying the somber look on Sadra's face. Lady Sadra, is everything all right?
Well, it's, I suppose, as all right as it's going to be. Some things... some things are not as easily fixed, I suppose. But we should talk about what our next step is. We won't be here forever, I hope. And when we go back, I was talking to Nadia. And she mentioned that she was concerned about reprisals. Because of our actions against the garrison, what might happen with the resistance. And I know that we may need to make our own plans about the Sultan's palace.
Maneha looks a little disappointed, like he wanted to talk something else, but he... just puts the berries down. And are there chairs around here?
There are. There are various cushions, chairs. They're more like sofa benches than chairs. But there's plenty to sit on, and it is all lavish.
He will pull forward one of the larger sofa bench things. Sit down. And... put one fist underneath his chin.
I am going to assume that this Sultan has very formidable men about him, possibly even more than that fortress or prison we had to go and save our taxis for.
And at this moment, he notices our taxis.
Wait, how did... Oh, this is very confusing.
Nadia wished for him.
She wished for him?
Yes. Anyway, I'm here now. And, I have to say, this is really nice.
Sit down. Did you just stand there?
And he does. He sits down after getting a plate full of food.
That is remarkable. Nadia, how did you get to wish for him?
Well, I wished for some of my favorite food, and it was there, and She kind of sideways glances at him, just kind of as a joke. I wished I didn't think it would work.
Oh wait, you're saying that you wished me here as a joke?
No, that's not what I'm saying.
And he just smiles. Says, that's alright.
I didn't think it would work.
Maneha nearly jumps out of his chair as he thumps onto the ground, wide-eyed, and he shouts something in Kintuk. But nothing happens. And he looks quite disappointed and sits back down.
I'm really glad you're here.
As am I.
Nadia looks kind of embarrassed.
Being this close to your father, I might have overstated my lack of, we'll call it concern. How close is his forge?
Right down that hall over there.
And
he wanted us to stay here for tonight.
Oh, well, that's very nice of him. Very generous. Just down that hall. Okay, that's good to know. He looks like he doesn't really want to go out that door right now and down that hall. Meanwhile, though, Sadra will look over at Maneha and she'll say, Maneha, are you all right? What did you say?
Maneha says, oh, no, I suppose I'm all right. You don't even have to roll sense motive. It's obvious he is not all right at not getting this wish.
To which Sadra figures that it was probably a wish, and she says, I understand. I didn't get one either.
Oh, I am sorry, Lady Sadra. Kunakiste.
And he stands up, not even realizing that he just spoken in Kintuk, and he walks away and looks to find a place for where he can be alone for a while.
Alright. As you find a space, you could find a space in this room. It is big enough and designed that you can get some alone space if you need it. Or you could step out. But Keen had stepped out previously. And Keen, as you had stepped out, you made your way back down the hallway. And as soon as you stepped into the hall, you could feel the temperature was rising. It was getting just a little more stifling. As you pass further and further away from the guest quarters and back towards the forge, that dry heat rises up around you. And it is as it was when you were in the forge. It is very hot. It is dry, and it is hot. As you come out, you can hear the methodical slam of the hammer on the anvil. You can hear the movement of machinery. Sounds like rolling stones and grinding gears. You can hear what appears to be a second hammer fall is happening as well. Not just a single hammer on anvil, but a second one. Although that second one seems to be not as great of a sound, not as huge. It's a smaller hammer, smaller anvil, something of that nature.
Keen will head towards the noise.
All right. And as you make your way into the forge, you pass machines that are as big as buildings that reach up to the vaulted ceiling, which is easily over 100 feet above you. Many of these machines actually press into that ceiling with shafts that come down, turning, moving gears and connecting with grinding wheels and bellows and lifting great weights before plunging them down again. And you can see that these are connected with various almost mechanical forging devices that seem to be capable of building. And in fact, some of them seem to be crafting plates of armor that would be big enough to put on a ship, let alone on a person. And you realize that this forge forges things for very, very big customers, as well as more normal-sized people. But as you make your way through the forge, you come around, working your way towards the center, the noise getting louder and louder as you go. And as you make your way closer, you can... Well, let me ask you, what languages do you know?
Ooh, let me check. I have way too many things on my character sheet. I'm having to scroll way down. Okay, Keen speaks Common, Draconic, Giant, Gnoll, and Orc. Which is actually Keen Took, not Orc.
Okay, so you do not recognize this sound as it seems like it could be speech, but you can't make it out. You do, however, recognize some writing in Giant. There seems to be what looks like it could be large enough to be the plating for some huge siege tower, but it is made in a humanoid shape, and you can see this massive armor that is hung off of various machinery and scaffolding as pieces are being added to it that are being forged by different great machines. You can see that written across the chest plate is in Giant. It says the words, "The power to rule and the strength to conquer." And it appears that there is a set of full plate armor that is being made for something that is probably huge or even maybe gargantuan in size. This is truly massive, and it bleeds with magic. It is incredibly powerful. As is this entire forge. But you come around the corner and you can see the snowy white owl wings of Rashan that flow into his white furred cat-like features as this huge djinn beats an anvil and is working a piece of steel in and out of a furnace that is glowing white hot. And you can see just a little ways away, working at a smaller furnace, is Mew, who seems to be working with some of the various machines, asking a lot of questions, going back and forth. You can see Ebon and Shade, the two centipedes, are present and look like they're being worked on, and you can see various machines are a part of that effort, as well as Mew, who is directing that work.
Keen will get close enough so that he can kind of see what's going on, but he will watch silently. He is busying his mind with figuring out what they're doing and how, and taking comfort in the noises and busyness of activity.
All right. And a couple of times you notice Mew specifically, but once you see Mew do it, you notice that Roshan also still speaking in this language that you don't know. It is Ignian, by the way, just as a language. But speaking in this language you don't know, you can see them almost seem to speak commands to various machines, and the machines seem to follow and respond and then follow their directions.
Once Keen realizes it's a spoken tongue, he will cast Comprehend Languages.
Okay, and when you do that, then you are able to understand, and you listen as Roshan explains to Mew a little bit in the middle of the conversation, but he's explaining to Mew how the various intelligent machines that he has crafted do their different parts to put together the larger pieces that he's working on, and how he's almost completed his current order, which is going to a particular client. And then every once in a while, some warnings from you not to get too close to the forge that Roshan is using, because it would burn Mew to oblivion if he got too close, being immortal. But they continue to work. And I will leave it at that, since the player is not here. And how long will Keen stay there?
Keen will stay there probably silently for a good half hour. Are there any other doorways?
Yes, you can see arched doorways. There are no doors in them. You can see the great stairs winding up and above, all the way up to where that ceiling is. Those are the ones that you guys came down originally. But now, from this floor, you can see coming off of the forge, almost like spokes on a wheel, you can see various arched doorways that lead off into the unknown. There's probably at least 12 of them.
Okay, Keen is going to pick the nearest one. All right, is it a circular room?
It is a circular room.
All right, Keen is going to pick one in as straight a line across from the door he came out of with the comfy room, and he is going to explore in that direction.
Okay, you make your way in that direction. As you do now with Comprehend Languages up, you can tell that the machines are all talking to each other. It is all related to the work that they are doing, the metal that they are pressing, the parts that they are fitting, but they are all, or at least all of the larger pieces, they all seem to have some level of intelligence and are working together to fashion these plates and put together these different constructs that they are building. But you make your way, leaving the forge behind, as you pass into the great archway. The archway extends up nearly to the ceiling, so it is incredibly high and open and vaulted. As you pass through, you find that what you thought was the wall turns out to be a very large pillar of some sort. It's probably about 60 feet square. But once you pass its 60-foot length, leaving the forge behind, you pass into a massive chamber that periodically has more of these 60-foot by 60-foot pillars that go up to the ceiling. But in between them are rows and rows and rows of stock. There are sorted stacks of metals. There are sorted stacks of woods and cloth. There's also completed objects. And you can see siege engines. You can see airships. You can see sets of armor. large and small. You can see weapons, some weapons that are of a colossal nature, others that appear to be small enough that somebody could use them that's of your size. But this is a room that extends on, as far as you can tell, into eternity. And if you look around at the various supplies that are there, I imagine you have detect magic. So you can tell that there's a lot of magical things here. A lot of the supplies are magical crafting supplies. They are imbued with strong magic, but you would notice that there is silver, there's adamantine, there is cold iron, there is more common materials, but then there are other things as well. Mithril, star Keen steel. Actually
doesn't have detect magic, but he would probably guess that in a Djinn's Forge there'd be magic items.
All right, well, then you'll just have to guess at the massive glowing things, and some of them literally radiate light. Others of them literally radiate darkness. So some of those things you can guess by the effect that they're having. There's one particular set of armor that looks like it is sized for a giant, but there are creeping tendrils of ice. The whole armor is just coated in a thick layer of ice, and the ice is creeping out from it, from where it's standing, due to the enchantment that's on it. So yeah, you get the idea that this is his storage area.
Keem's gonna look around and see if there are any spears.
You look around and go ahead and do a perception check. Or actually, do a dungeoneering check.
That is a 10 total.
All right, now do a perception check.
That is a 21.
All right, so you begin looking around. It's a little disorienting. And as you look around, it takes you a while. It probably takes you a good hour before you come around a corner and you see a spear. This spear is set on hooks. There is an entire wooden facade that has been built up to carry this spear. The spear has a polished red wood handle, the shaft being red wood with crimson silk tied beneath the head and coming away in a sort of a tail coming off of the head, also wrapped down lower on the handle, potentially where you might hold on to it. And the head itself is long and sleek and sharp. And it would appear to be just your size.
Keen will admire the spear and even gently touch it, but he's going to resist picking it up lest he be accused of stealing, because he's seen how they deal with thieves around here.
Okay. And as you run your hand just briefly along that polished oak handle, that shaft, and along the silks, and let the silk play through your fingers, you hear a voice that says, "You are curious, are you not?"
Keen looks around, but, you know, he's used to dealing with invisible creatures. And he is going to silently and stilly prepare a spell and hold it in case any threat appears. And he is going to say, "Yes, I am very curious. I am curious about many things, including who you might be and where you are.
pick me up. You have the hands of a warrior. I can sense that. Pick me up, and we will be unstoppable. I can make you the greatest.
I'm gonna roll and see if Keen realizes that the spear's talking to him. Okay, Keen guesses that the spear might be talking to him.
Oh, are you a talking spear?
Yes, you could say that.
How would just picking you up make me powerful?
The power of a weapon is in the hands that wield it. If you pick me up, I will make you powerful. But you also will make me powerful. It is the bond of the wielder and his weapon.
Keen moves. How is this spear displayed? Is it like at eye level? Is it up high, down low?
Yeah, it's right at about shoulder level. The head is turned so that it is flat to the eye, and you can get the full contour of its blade. And it is exquisite. Like I said, there's a full oaken facade that's been built up that's probably about 7 feet tall by about 6 feet wide, contoured and scrolled so that it all relates the glory of this weapon.
What is your name? What is your name?
Just a minute. I am Fire Tongue, and I was made to be wielded by a king.
By a king? Wait, a Does king or a that... king?
Is there a difference? Make a will save.
I believe there is a difference in spelling.
Go ahead and make a will save.
That's a 28.
Okay. Nothing. You don't sense anything.
Keen will straighten from where he'd been looking at it and said, "Well, you have the wrong person. I am not a king. I am a Keen. But it is very nice to meet you. I wonder if anything in here is for sale." And he turns back towards where Roshan was.
And as you turn back, the spirit's just like, "Wait, really? You're just gonna walk away? You know how long I had to wait for him to get here?" And then it just mutters to itself. But the voice recedes out of Keen's head as he departs.
Keen feels a little uneasy after that interaction with the spear. It was reminding him a bit too much of some of the things that are tugging at his brain. But it was a really nice spear. And I was rolling for his reactions, and he actually was tempted to take the spear until it said it was for a king. And then he was like, "Oh, well, not for me then."
Yeah, wonderful keen. Definitely missed what the spear was trying to imply there.
All right, so he's heading back. He's looking through things. Would Bruman have caught up with him by now?
So let's see. Did Bruman leave the room? Is that correct?
Yeah, he left around just after our taxis joined the table. He left to find Keen.
Okay, so as Bruman, as you come out, you come into the forge, and it is hot, it is dry, almost stifling for you as you stand in the forge, and you can hear the machines moving, the crash of hammer on anvil. You can hear the repetitive hammering as Rashaan continues his work, and the machines around him moving. What do you do?
Probably very similar to what Keen did, which is looking around. He doesn't have comprehend languages, so he wouldn't understand most of what's being said. He might wait if Mew looks like he has an opening and ask him if he's seen Keen.
And Mew looks over and says, "Well, Bruman, no, I haven't seen Keen. Do you need me to find him?" And he looks like he's ready to cast a spell.
"No, not yet. I don't think he's in danger or anything. Just noticed he was gone, so I was gonna check on him."
"All right. Well, if anything happens, I think I'm going to be here for a while." And you look over, and Rashaan kind of looks at Bruman with this look that is like, "You're interrupting our work." To which Mew says, "Just let me know if you need me."
Brew will give a quick nod and back away. Although he also kind of gives Rashaan a quasi-appreciative glance, because, I mean, the guy did fix his drawing in his journal, and he was very impressed by that. But he will look elsewhere for Keen.
Okay, there are at least 12 doors. As you look out from the forge around you, it is a circular room with great arched, vaulted exits, at least 12 of them. Which one will you go through?
You know, he'll start to the left.
Okay. And as you head off to the left to look for Keen, it's going to be a while before you guys find each other. Go ahead and make a survival check just to see how long this is going to take.
A very, very long time, because that's a 12 total.
All right. You know, they always say, put your hand on the wall and just keep it on the wall, right? And you'll make it through any maze. That doesn't work when it's just a pillar, though. So this could take a while. In any case, eventually you guys will catch up to each other, but it is probably going to be at least an hour. That being said, back in the room, our taxis is enjoying the food, and Sadra is sitting not away from everybody, but just a little bit quiet. But as the meal, as you've all eaten, and conversation dies down a little bit, there's still some decisions that need to be made.
Maneha, after a little while,
He will come back. He will come back from his solitude and come and sit next to Sadra. And you watch as he's actually still drying his eyes just a little bit.
I am sorry. I just needed a moment to myself. I wished that my brother Kenkuta could be brought here. He has been missing for a very long time, but it did not work.
And Sadra will reach over and put her hand on Maneha's arm. Maneha, I'm so sorry.
Thank you. Thank you, Lady Sadra.
And he will pat her hand that's on his arm.
I was hoping, Lady Sadra. I do not know if this is a good time or not, but and he'll turn and look at him. Will you tell me about the Taff?
Of course. The Taff is the great creator. He's the one who penned the words of fate. He's the one that created the worlds and gave life to all that is. We believe that a Taff is our source. He's both the one that we have come from and the one that we seek to find. But we also believe that he is good and he is merciful and he loves his children. A Taff does not sit on the mountain and wait for his children to eventually find him. He reaches out and desires to teach us and lead us if we will listen for his voice. A Taff is good, and his eyes are always on those who love him and seek him. Is there a particular reason why you're asking?
Yeah, dries his eyes a little bit more. Well, I have heard of Mendu who speak of their gods and of the people that they worship, or that they just serve without worshiping. Brother Mew, he serves, what is it called? The Meta. I do not know much about this Meta, but it does not sound like a very good person to be around to Uma too often. And I have heard of others such as Ranelagh the Cruel, or excuse me, Count Ranelagh the Cruel, who claims to be a god, but as we saw, he was not, because we were able to kill him. Even the fact that we were able to hurt him was made it obvious that he was not a god. And I know that there are many others. I have heard of ancient ones beyond the sea, on the other side of the world. Apparently there were many of them, but these are just old stories that my people tell sometimes. And I have heard that there were many guardian spirits, such as Siv Sinu, who watches over my people. But very few that I have heard of, in fact, I think none I have heard of, ever have compared with who we call the Unseen One, who watches over us and is the good creator of all things. Until I had heard about your Itaf, and about the one that Brother Ruman's people serve, I am wondering if they are one and the same.
That is something that I have thought about before as well. When we went to go visit Bruman and his family, it was so long ago. Aesil, do you remember?
I do.
I remember going to church with them and sitting in the service and feeling a closeness with it. As though, even though we used different words, there was a close bond and
an understanding. And I felt that Ataf was pleased that I was there. I believe that Ataf is known by many names in different worlds and different places. I believe that he is in all of those places. If we'll just look for him. The Unseen One. Well, that seems like a very fitting name for Ataf.
Maneha slowly nods his head. I am becoming more and more convinced of this. When we spoke to your grandfather, Rishon. Oh, you were not conscious, so you did not hear any of it. But when we spoke to your grandfather, Rishon, he asked of us proof that we were loyal to you for reasons why he should let you go. And at one point, he asked Brother Katsu if he would be willing to take your place. And he said that yes, indeed, he was.
Wait, hold on. What?
And she's looking around, realizing Katsu had also slipped away with Mew previously and is not present in the room. She's like, what do you mean I wasn't conscious and was... Somebody needs to start from the beginning.
Oh. I figured that Brother Katsu had... Oh, well, okay. And without going into super detail of exactly what everyone said, because you have gotten it wrong anyway, he will reveal essentially all that happened to him, to her. And as Brother Katsu went to take your place, you fell into his arms, and you woke up. And your grandfather said that something about us being worthy, and that this true love showed things to him. I do not remember all the words. That is because something very strange had happened to me that I was thinking on, and it was difficult to observe other things. As Brother Katsu said that he would take your place, I was going to step forward and insist that it would be me instead, for you and Katsu should be together. And then there was a voice telling me that no, I must allow Katsu to do this. It was very, very difficult for me to do, for I have pledged that I would see you safely back to your people. But this also includes making sure that you and Brother Katsu can be together. But I am quite certain that the voice came from the Unseen One. And so I held my tongue and allowed him to take your place. But then everything worked out just fine, and Rishon allowed both of you to go free.
Wow. Thank you, Maneha, and all of you. Thank you very much. I'm honored, and I don't deserve your friendship.
Oh, but Lady Sedra, if indeed Ataf and the Unseen One and, by whatever name it goes by under, with Brother Ruman's family, are all one and the same, then you already understand what it means to receive things you do not deserve, and that all things we have received, we have not deserved at all. So, it is all right if we give you something you do not deserve also, because it has been given to us.
Maneha, you are very sweet. Thank you.
He does grin pretty big at being called sweet.
I need to go find Katsu. Excuse me.
And Sedra will stand up and leave the room.
Maneha will lean over to Nadia. Well, I hope I have not just gotten Katsu in very big trouble.
I'll be the opposite.
Oh, okay, that is good. Did you hear Brother Katsu's poem?
Me?
Yes. It was very good. I was very impressed. But there are still...
Could have used a little bit of work.
Oh, yes. It was not something that should go into the Hall of the Poets. But nonetheless, it conveyed all of his love to Lady Sadra very wonderfully. But there are still two more parts to the ritual of courtship, which I must guide him through. Nonetheless, I think he is off to a very good start.
The ritual of what?
He kind of looks at you just a little, with a little bit of curiosity. The ritual of courtship? Do you not have a ritual of courtship from here, where you are from? Well, you are from here. Where, in this place?
Yes, we do.
Ah, then you understand. There are steps that one must go through in order to win the heart of the young lady and to prove his love to her.
Okay.
Brother Katsu has taken the first step, the ritual of words, but there is still the ritual of gifts that he must go through.
Gifts sounds a little bit more familiar.
Among my people, when a young man wishes to advance the courtship, he goes through the ritual of gifts, and he will journey to one of our high mountains and find a mountain flower. It is blue and very beautiful, and take it to the young lady. If the young lady wishes to continue the courtship, she will allow him to put the flower in her hair, and then she will wear it everywhere as a sign that she is continuing the courtship with this young man. But if she refuses, then the courtship is off, and they speak of it no more.
Is Katsu gonna have to go find this mountain flower?
Well, I do not think there are mountain flowers around here in Cordoba, but, he turns to Nadia, I have heard that there is a desert flower. Is this true?
There's lots of desert flowers.
No, I mean there is a desert flower, and I think it is one that is very special to Lady Sadra.
You're talking about the Cordoban rose. The luck finding one.
That is it. It is a rose of Cordoba. Why would we need luck to find one?
Because they're pretty much extinct.
Pretty much. I have noticed that when my friends say pretty much, they actually mean almost all, but still a little.
Well, I'm just guessing based on what I've observed.
Manea's eyes start shining. Yes, yes. This is the flower that we must help friend Katsu find for Lady Sadra.
Like I said, good luck.
And Manea will continue eating, and if anybody chooses to listen, he'll talk a little bit more about the King Took and their courtship rituals.
All right, and Artaxes would ask questions. He's interested in all of you and trying to get to know you a little bit, since you have done so much to help both him and Nadia. Is there anything else that either Nadia or Aesol or Bakir would like to accomplish before we go back out to Bruman and King?
Aesol's good. She will listen to Maneha talk about this courtship ritual, looking highly amused.
Bakir is still in the corner watching, listening, cleaning his armor now, but lost in his own thoughts.
All right, and at some point, our taxis would have approached Bakir, recognizing him as a Templar, but also aware of the Knights of the Shard. He would say, "You have my thanks. I'm in your debt. I know it is not your people that you fight for, but you fight for mine. Nadia has spoken well of you and all that you've done for the Resistance.
I simply fight for the good of the oppressed. And you have done much more for the Resistance than I. It's the least I could do to see you free to continue to help the Resistance."
"Well, I'm not sure what you mean by much more. I feel like I haven't done anything for too long now. But I'm glad to be out, and I look forward to fighting at your side. Anyone who's willing to put his life on the line for those that cannot defend themselves is a worthy friend of our taxis." And he will extend a hand to you. The other hand, he'll kind of reach back, motioning towards the table. "Please, will you not break bread? We are brothers in arms. Perhaps could even be friends."
Bakir takes a few seconds to respond as he looks toward the table. "I still don't know that I really trust these outsiders. But if you request it, I will go."
"There are many strange things in the world, but let them all be tempered by experience. And some would count it strange that a Western Knight of the Templar should be brought into the trust and confidences of an Eastern Desert Resistance. And yet, strange things. Come. They have not proven themselves duplicitous, at least at this point. I'm willing to trust them."
"I pray that it does not come back to haunt us all. But he will set his armor to the side and rise to follow our taxis toward the center of the room.
As you walk over, he kind of speaks a little quietly to you and says, "Well, don't forget to try that roasted gazelle over there. Nadia introduced me to it, but it's absolutely fantastic. Something about it. I've heard of it. Out in Amaya, they make it. But that's a little out of my range. Still, it is fantastic." And as Bakir goes to join the group, we look back as Bruman. Finally, you catch sight of Keen making his way back. At this point, you are kind of doubling back towards the forge to get your bearings again, and you just catch sight of Keen. Looks like he's kind of doing the same thing. And so you do see him.
"Ah, there you are.
Oh, hello, friend Bruman. Is this not an amazing place?"
"It's quite large."
"Indeed, and they have things made for many large creatures. Oh, and there's an amazing spear that speaks. But it said it was made for a king."
"It speaks?"
"Oh yes, it said to pick it up, and then we would be unstoppable. But it was made for a king, not for me.
Brew looks at him for a little bit. Just like one of those, And he bats him on the shoulder. Probably for the better. Yeah.
Still, it made me think, perhaps I need a new spear.
I don't know. This one's pretty special. Tell me about it. This one. The one you used recently.
Yeah, and Keen is holding it. He always carries it with him. Keen's face actually falls a little bit. It's not special. It's just a spear. All warriors are taught how to make them. I made this one before I left home, so it was new last year, but I think perhaps I need a new one.
But a new one wouldn't have been to the Feywild.
Well, my spear hardly helped us there.
But it could have. Brew will tink his finger on the spearhead, because you said it was cold iron, right?
Yeah, that's right.
Besides, it's not really the weapon. It's you, Keen. You can have this spear. You can have a different spear. Here, hold this one. You will hand over Kalman, then. Does it make you feel any different?
This one is heavier. So I think it would make me tired.
I think perhaps, Keen, you just need to practice with the one that you have. And experience life with this one. It'll create stories with you. And then it will be a very special spear.
Well, if it gets its strength from the user, then that is the problem. I wish I were stronger.
We can work on that. We can. I promise, it is possible. We can make you stronger. But I'd rather think your strengths lie elsewhere. Your mother didn't really use spears either. She's trained in it, isn't she?
Well, yes, all Kingtuk are trained in spears. But my mother, by this time, by this age, she had at least earned her true name. I've been away from home for over a year. I've moved further than my father ever did from the village, or my grandfather or my uncle. They are gone now. I've gone further than they ever have, but I still only have my child name.
I'll admit I'm unfamiliar with this. Can you explain?
Oh. Keen looks a little confused for a moment, and then a little apologetic, as he realized that Brumman still has his child name, too. But Keen will try to explain. When we are born, we are given a name. As we become children, we are given a name that suits our character, our personality. When we prove ourselves as warriors, we gain a new name. And then you can earn other names as you continue on. My mother, Zapana, she was given her name when she came to meet you all, when she came on that mission. Before that, she was Sepana. It means something different in Kingtuk. By taking on the new mission, she got a new name because she was very brave to do so. My name, Keen, it means eyes. Keen Kerekata, eyes of the serpent. But I have no new name. This is my child name. I am not a child.
Brew will smile at that. She kind of understands where he's coming from with that. Well, I can't say my people have quite the same understanding of names. But maybe instead of, well, in addition to, not instead of, because your people's traditions are very important. But until you can return home and get your true name, maybe think about a different way to understand your current name. For instance,
it can also mean people.
There you go. There's another one. Let me tell you mine. My name means to hum or to growl. When I was younger, to hum was far more accurate. Once the war began, to growl has become far more accurate. Perhaps, until you get your true name, think about eyes differently. You are getting to see the world in a way that the rest of your people haven't had the ability to.
Keen looks begrudgingly thoughtful. I suppose that's true. No, that's definitely true. For my generation, I've come the furthest, except for now we have many of my generation working at Solvenza Carson's.
Yes, but none of your generation have been to the Feywild. Or here.
That's true. None of my generation owns part of the Feywild.
An even better point.
Keen looks a little bit more cheerful. But he also is beginning to look a little sad.
Brutal look at him like an older brother. And just wait.
I hope I will be stronger soon, friend Bruman. I don't want to lose anyone else.
Well, two things there. First off, we can work on your spear throwing. That is easy enough. And there is certainly plenty of physical training. But if you walked away from a talking spear and say you've got some inner strength, don't sell yourself short.
Keen looks utterly bewildered. Like, why wouldn't I walk away from a talking spear? But Keen will get his smile back. He says, well, it would be good to work on the spear, but my spell casting is much faster. And he finally releases the spell he'd been holding and turns invisible. And he says from right behind Bruman's left ear, spell casting is way better than just spear throwing. Hey, you used to live without magic. How did you do it?
Well, I suppose if you live without something, then you don't really miss it. And he will turn around and look for the random spot in the sky that is glowing because Kalmanden has that always lit thing going. So I don't think it can actually go invisible, to my understanding, unless it's covered.
Keen will realize that Bruman is looking for him and reappear and hand back Kalmanden.
Thank you. But yes, you are far more effective with your spells.
It was terrifying to not have magic when we were in that awful dungeon. Oh, I don't know how people do it. I could not survive without my magic.
Brew looks around. Are you dead?
Keen blinks. Oh, I see your point.
Brew will chuckle and pat him on the shoulder. You keep working your magic, Keen. And you and I can keep working on your spear throwing so that when you are in an area where you are feeling a little less magical, you won't have cause to be so alarmed.
Keen looks gratefully at Bruman, and as they walk on, he will begin to ask him about some of the finer points of melee weaponry.
Brew will humor him and explain.
And
I think Keen would be ready to return to the room where the others are now. He's, you know, he's feeling better.
All right. And as you make your way back towards the room and the others, that's, I think, where we'll close for tonight. There's still maybe a little bit of room to catch up on some conversations that couldn't happen for a lack of their players. And we look forward to having both Mako and Katsu back with us. And hopefully next time, turn our attention towards what is ahead. The final chapters of this Cordoban story. So congratulations, everybody.
Thank you, QS.
Thank you.
Yay. Thank you, QS.
You are very welcome. It was a lot of fun to get to explore the forge of a djinn.
That was a nice-looking spear.
So I think at some point along that walk back, Brew probably would have also mentioned to Keen about a certain torch. And then give him advice. Don't touch magical items. Just don't do it. Always resist. Always. Until you're sure that they're 100% fine. Don't touch. Don't talk. Just leave.
Just say no, kids.
Keen will add that to the list of lessons he is learning from you guys.
Never eat singing food.
Be a guest.
No, that's singing utensils.
Well, if there are any conversations you were not able to have this week, then we will look forward to them next time.